from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
It's 2009 now, a new year, which means that this is the retrospective show, but apparently Ryan does not like New Year's.
I couldn't give any less of a crap. New Year's is a total bust, and it's terrible, and it works out great for everybody in the southern hemisphere who gets to go out and have lots of fun. But what temperature is it here right now?
You know what? I just realized something. Remember how I just asked you a couple seconds ago before we started the show where your mind was at? I think I just realized what it is. You came back and there's a cold front, and you were somewhere where there were some decent temperatures. Man, I feel your pain.
No, actually, I mean, I'm inside. I mean, it's nice and warm in here. I got my little vest and my hoodie, and I'm actually quite toasty at the moment.
Yeah, so but it's not the same. Really... Man, you look outside and there's nothing but snow, and you know that it's going to be nothing but snow for the next 3 months. It can't feel good.
I'll tell you what's depressing. What's depressing is how early it gets dark around here. Yeah. That is pretty much the worst thing about it, is because, you know, when the sun is out, it's all well and good, but once it gets dark at 4 p.m., you're just like, oh, hells no. And that's pretty much the only bad thing about all that.
Was it? What time would the sun go down when you were on vacation?
Oh, God, it felt like more like 6.
Dang.
You got like an extra 2 hours. See, 6 is a reasonable time for the sun to start going down. I'm okay with it being dark at 6, but when it's dark at like 4:30, that ain't right.
You were a pile of sunshine this morning. Well, actually, we're in the afternoon, but whatever. Okay, so today's show is going to be kind of like a year in review. We're going to look back at some of the other podcasts we did in 2008, the highlights, the lowlights. Also going to talk about a couple questions that we had for a mailbag episode. Try to make a whole episode about mailbag, but you can't get a lot of people to mail in.
Oh.
Just can't do it.
Okay.
I tried to force them. I tried to put it out there, but no, they just want to listen.
Maybe now that I'm back, maybe they'll be more encouraged to do so, now that they know that I'm here and ready to answer them with my wisdom.
Yeah, you have a lot of wisdom. All right, let's... Now, you haven't had time to put together the list, so the list is obviously of my positive and negative highlights and lowlights of the show. I'm sure something will come to mind, but I don't think you'll necessarily disagree. Here's the positive things of the show so far, according to me. All right, positive point number one. People have... We're about to reach 100,000 individual downloads. That's probably going to be sometime in February, which is a huge thing for us, because 100,000 is a lot of that. That is a significant number for any podcast.
Yeah, if we had a dollar every time somebody downloaded our show,
we would be very rich.
Very, very happy. Very happy.
So that is definitely a good thing. I mean, considering also the fact that this show is spread entirely through word of mouth. Seriously, like, what efforts have we put to really make the show public?
Honestly. Oh, I don't think you've put any effort into it whatsoever.
No, I think that's probably part of the lowlights that we'll cover in a little while. Okay, yeah. Before we start getting all negative, let's keep this positive train going. All right. The other one is thegoodatheist.net continues to be one of the top atheist podcasts on the web, despite the fact that there are other people that have giant organizations and websites that, you know, devote their entire time to
crazy budgets and everything else. We say, screw you, buddies.
Our budget is a $150 mic, and that is it.
Yeah,
that is it.
That's pretty much it.
So, you know, I'm very happy and impressed. Obviously, that's all you guys who listen. Obviously, it couldn't be me unless I decided that I wanted to listen to my own show 100,000 times.
Here's the thing. I mean, I know you're an egotistical bastard.
I just
let it in a little bit, because if the show sucked, no one would listen to it. They really wouldn't.
That is true. That is true. I'm sure there's plenty of other shows out there that are completely terrible. I just... You know what? I can't even be bothered with terrible shows. Mm. Good luck to those people making them. Hopefully you'll do well, I guess. And the other thing, too, and this has really surprised me, is that... remember a couple of months ago, I recorded an episode all by myself. Called it the special episode. I don't actually think you even listened to it.
No,
but
I did not.
It doesn't matter, because who cares that you didn't listen to it? The fact is, a lot of people listened to it, and the response from that show was really amazing. The attempt that I tried with the show, at least, was just to kind of show, hey, you know, this is my concept of what spirituality is to me. And the surprising thing was that it rang pretty true for a lot of people. And there, I had some tremendous emails. One person in particular wrote to me saying, like, you know what? Oh, you inspired me to go back and try to get my career back in order. And I think this person was studying, like, I don't know, a PhD in physics or something crazy. You know, you read this, you're like, say, what? Mm-hmm. Anyways, that was pretty cool. Those are probably the top three things of 2008. So real happy about that. Okay, mm-hmm. Let's move on to the negative parts. You unless saying, you have another positive thing.
You know what my favorite positive thing was?
What's that?
Was when we said that country in Africa was in the Middle East.
That's actually our negative low light. That is our low light.
That definitely is my highlight of the low lights right there.
Yeah, that is a highlight of the low light. Good segue, because that was possibly one of the biggest mistakes that we ever made on the show.
But not the only one.
And you know
one.
What? Again, like I say, it is one of the most popular shows. That is one of the first shows that people listen to, and they have the pleasure of hearing the fact that we don't even know where that country is. I think that's pretty special.
Yeah.
I think not a lot of podcasts that are about to reach the 100,000 download limit can claim to make such factual errors and get away with it.
I'm sure if Fox News put out podcasts, they would have us beat everywhere.
Oh God. Yeah. You don't even want to know how many people will probably download their podcast. But I don't wanna have that same audience. That's like saying, hey, why don't we attract the bottom of the fucking barrel piece of shit audience? Yeah, we could probably find a lot of people that are crap that like to listen to, you know, faux news. I mean Fox News. Anyway. The other low light was something that I had said during one of the shows, that the CO2 levels in the atmosphere had never been higher. And that was a factual error, actually. Mm. It was a factual error because it didn't take into account that in the past a couple million years, the atmosphere was vastly different. Mm-hmm. There were higher levels of...
So did somebody school you and say 60 billion years ago, the atmosphere was actually full of... Like a noxious green gas?
No, not noxious green gas. It was just more saying, like, let's say nitrogen levels were lower and oxygen and carbon dioxide levels were higher.
And how many living creatures were there on the planet at this time, or was it completely barren because that
killed everything? No. Actually, at this time, it was probably the most fertile time in, sort of like in our history. With we're talking the Jurassic period, you know? Like, you can't have giant animals like a T-Rex or a Brachiosaur walking around with the levels of oxygen that we have currently in our atmosphere. And you can't have big-ass plants unless you have the levels of CO2 that were present at that time. But it's a different makeup in an atmosphere, you know, completely different bag. Mm. So
you're saying that...
Somebody was nitpicking, so I decided that I was going to include that. Because, you know, it was factually incorrect on my end. Mm-hmm. I did say never before. I should have probably said never before in our history as a species.
Yeah, but what the hell does that mean anyways?
I'm trying to put together a low light here. You know, I'm trying to put together... I'm trying to make amends for factual errors.
You, sir, are like George Bush being asked what his mistakes are and being like, well, I guess I did that little nitpicky thing wrong. It's like...
What, I made worse errors than that?
Let me give you a low...
You call me George Bush?
Let me give you a low light, and let's see if this rings any bells.
All right.
Being completely unprepared every show and just winging it. Bam! Low light.
That is not a low light. I'm proud of that.
Yeah.
I'm proud of the fact that we can still be generally entertained by just talking about stuff. Because here's the thing, and a lot of... We get flack for this, but I don't consider this a low light. Because everybody goes on and says, oh, you guys don't prepare enough. You don't do your research. We're having a conversation. You are listening to a conversation by two guys who are just casually talking about subjects.
And there just happens to be a microphone here, and we just happen to upload it every week.
I accidentally... You know what? It's one of those things where I accidentally hit record when we were just having a conversation. That's what happened.
Yeah.
So, you know what? Sometimes if you haven't... I feel that if it was overly researched and, you know, you coming in, you would kind of just not have a very good time if it was overly researched. Am I right here?
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
I'm doing this for you.
I understand.
I'm doing this
thank you so
for
much.
You.
Thank you so much.
Okay, another low light was I don't think you listened to the last show. Was my funny tinfoil hat theory on prohibitionism.
Mm.
Basically, in it, I was saying that prohibitionism, at least one of the reasons why it's maintained, is because you need to have some way of, you know, keeping the fear of the man in people. And by making any drug illegal that people obviously want, or by making anything illegal that people want, you have a pretty damn good excuse to put them in jail. Like, the example being that a third of adults in the United States have or do smoke marijuana. I'm like, you could jail a third of the people out there. It's almost like having that secret little thing that you could just... you know, hold in front of a person's nose and be like, well, I can say that you smoke marijuana and I can ruin your career. And it was just also saying that it kept people kind of like fearful of others, because the prison populations overwhelmingly are made up of people that are there for drug possession charges, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So all of a sudden you think that your own country is filled with criminals, when in reality they're just people who are engaging in recreational drugs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost part of like the whole, well, I was saying jokingly, I wasn't necessarily 100% serious, but I said that it's interesting to contemplate that, you know, prohibitionism allows, you know, governments to get away with a lot of shit that they normally wouldn't, because you're afraid. You're kept constantly afraid that your, you know, your drug-fueled neighbor is going to break in and try to steal your shit.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm not going to deny the fact that I wouldn't just bring it down to prohibitionism and drug laws and everything. Across the board, you're seeing that they're adding more and more laws in just to be able to do whatever that, like, basically it's what I call it's like if a cop wants to be able to pull you over, they now have, and you hear this all the time, they now have ample cause to do so no matter what. And they can just say, oh, well, I heard something coming out of the car, there's smoke coming out of the car, whatever. The amount of probable cause they need.
Yeah.
Is so low right now that they could pretty much stop you and search you for anything now.
Well, you
and
that's saw, not you saw how that 100-mile border thing I was telling you, like that I put up on the site, where it's like 100 miles from the coastline.
Yeah.
You can stop anybody anytime and search them because that's considered the border. Two-thirds of Americans live 100 miles from the border. I'm like, you can stop and detain 100, you know, like two-thirds of your own population. Mm-hmm. They consider it a constitution-free zone.
Yeah.
I'm like, two-thirds of your population lives in a constitution-free zone. Where are people living where there is a constitution? Like, I just want to know. Like, they should actually have a zone where it is a constitution zone that you can go in case you're afraid.
Mm-hmm.
Because those places are getting fucking, you know, are disappearing. Next thing you know, it'll be like 500 miles from border, 1,000 miles from border, whatever.
But yeah, I mean, across the board, you could say it's like that. But for the whole drug thing, and you're right to a degree, because, you know, in the 60s and 70s, they used to arrest all of the troublemakers on drug charges. So what they would do, they'd hunt them down. And if they didn't have weed on them, they'd plant weed on them.
Yep.
And then they would be arrested. So in a certain degree, you're right. But on an overall thing, I honestly think the drug prohibition has more to do on the fact that the government thinks that we would all turn into to just sit around stonies that just do nothing but get high and play video games.
Isn't that what we do?
Hmm?
Okay, the other thing was the failure to put together the actual mailbag episode, which is a bit of a low light. I'm a little disappointed that I couldn't get, you know, the thousands of people who listen to the show. Mm-hmm. I could only get, you know, three or four people that are actually sent in questions. It was a little disappointing.
Well, maybe
it's a humbling moment when you're sort of like reaching a milestone and all of a sudden you're like, all right, send in your questions, and nobody sent it.
Maybe they don't respect you enough because you obviously don't prepare.
You know what I think it is? Here's what I think it is. I think it's one of those things where you're just like, well, somebody else is going to do it.
Yeah.
You know, like, I obviously know that people listen to the show, so somebody else will listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there is no somebody else. That somebody else is you, dear listener. You, please, send in some, like, I want to actually make a mailbag question. I was going to read some of the questions that were for the mailbag for the show, but I think I'm going to hold on to that and actually talk about the thing that you linked, because I want to make a full mailbag episode.
Oh, dude, you want to talk about the Rick Warren thing?
Yes, I do. Let's talk about that, actually. Like, that's going to be our talking point today, because I want to. You seem like you want to talk about this pretty bad.
No. Truth be told, I just sent it to you, and you know, I mean, honestly, I haven't been following up too much on it because I think it's pretty. Okay, let's talk about it. How about this? Since obviously you didn't prepare.
I'm reading it right now.
Since obviously you didn't prepare, I want to start off and let's talk a little bit about that atheist bus campaign.
You want to talk about that again?
Yeah.
I know we already covered it.
I know we already touched it, but I just wanted to bring it up again now that they actually went ahead and they did it. I wanted to mention, do you remember the exact quote on the side of the bus?
Yeah, there probably is no God, so don't worry about it.
So don't worry about it. Enjoy your life. What a smarmy, snarky fucking thing to say. What? I mean, it's so hilarious. It is. I mean, if you want to look at a way to basically infantilize the religious people in the country, why don't you just be like, oh, well, don't worry about it because monsters don't exist and there's nothing for you to worry about. So just go on your merry little way and try to relax a little bit because you suck.
Is it also implying that people who are religious just aren't enjoying life? I just don't understand here.
I don't. I mean, it was. To me, I mean, and this is how it came across the whole time. To me, it just came across as petty and lame. And so in the way that they did it, I'm like, ugh. And sure, lots of atheists are like, ha ha, but I'm just
we
like...
We got them! Yeah, We got them!
I'm just like, you recognize that the primary problem atheists have is the fact that everybody thinks we're douches. And this does not help.
We are definitely douches when it comes to campaigns like that. Mm-hmm. Funny story, though. In Australia, they tried to do the same campaign. And originally, the bus companies were going to be okay with it. But then they basically changed their minds, not indicating why, but the reasons are fairly obvious.
Yeah.
They're like, we have theistic groups that pay us monies for advertising, and they pay better than you guys. So fuck you guys. Mm-hmm. You know, like, we don't need your money.
Yeah.
And a lot of atheists are feeling pretty down and out about that. I'm like, why? Do you actually think that publicity, number one, has any effect on anybody whatsoever anymore? Mm-hmm. I mean, think about when you go on the bus and you get a Big Red kind of like, ad. Do you go buy Big Red gum?
Yeah.
Huh? You go. You want a Big Red chew after you see that? No, you don't. You don't give a shit. You don't even look at it. You're just, look at the color composition. Ah, meaningless.
No, you know what? I kind of look at it in the way. I understand why they're doing it to a degree. It's kind of that whole, we're here, we're queer, get used to it kind of thing. It's the exact same thing, because back in the day, look at it like back in the 60s, no gay people around. Now gay people have decided, in order to make everybody more comfortable, not just in order to get into people's heads that we're not going anywhere, and to, just be like, this is how many gay people there are, but it's also for gay people to say, holy crap, there are other gays out there, and I'm not alone, and I'm going to go out, and I'm going to get into this world, and these people aren't afraid to take a march down the street. Well, it's the same thing with atheists. They're saying, look, we're here, and we're now going to start getting into people's faces, and we're now going to start announcing ourselves. Because if there's one thing that we can't understand, it's the idea that atheists don't really get a good...
good rep?
Not a good rep, but a good media presence and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. Every time there's a media presence, it's always someone saying, oh, well, treat atheists like trolls and just laugh at them because what a foolish position for them to have. Mm. No, God, what are you, crazy? You crazy kids.
Yeah, but basically, we are held down there. But for people to complain about how atheists... Or how we can't advertise on buses in Australia. Man, Australia has way bigger problems than that.
Huge problems. They censor the internet. They, they treat their aboriginals like shit.
They treat everybody that's the wrong shade of brown like crap. Like absolute crap. I mean, human rights down there and racism, just out of check. Out of complete check. It is unbelievable. And, people are... There was a recent statement by the Prime Minister of Australia basically saying that, essentially saying that Muslims are terrible people and that the headscarf is an oppression and he wants to wipe it out of Australia. And I'm like, okay, well, people are taking offense to this. I'm
like, tolerance is the story.
People are taking offense to this story. I'm like, do you realize that Australia has camps? Like internment camps for illegal immigrants that are so terrible sew their mouths shut to try and raise awareness for it, and no one gives a crap about that. It's just
well, they're not white and privileged, so why should I care?
Yeah. So yeah, just to say on that, as far as I think the bus campaign, I understand why they did it, and I like why they did it, but they could have done it in a way that wasn't so dickish.
You know what? Here's one of the things. I'm reading a book that you got called Righteous. You brought this back. This is about the evangelical youth movement in the States and just how powerful it is. And when I'm reading that, it's like one thing that the author, what's her name?
Lauren Sandler.
Lauren Sandler tries to sort of like get people to realize, is saying like, listen, they offer something that other movements don't offer. They try to take hip culture and Christianize it, saying like, well, you can have your MTV, you can have your Terminator 2 movie, but at the end of the day, it's all about Jesus, and you got to go around, you got to go and convert other people to it. And then you just see that in any movement, every revolution has at its core a strong youth movement. And what's funny is that you look at sort of like the atheist youth movement, which is basically all these sort of like young people that are basically decided, I don't want no God and fuck it and it's no good and it's stupid, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden, anybody that's tried to come forward and say, hey, we should kind of get together and tell other people bad, they're like, fuck it, that sounds like religion. Mm-hmm. You're like, well, it's not religion, it is a movement. It's some, like, it's almost like you're trying to tell people, hey, the earth is not flat. Person saying, well, I don't want to take part in that. That sounds like religion. They're trying to tell people what to do.
Well, maybe they just think it's like organized culture. And to a large degree, they felt like that overall, be it through churches or be it through communities or be it through, you know, your freaking Britney Spears fan club, it's all turned out to be bull. So why would you want to participate in anything else like that?
I think the reason you want to is that unlike something, say, like pop culture that you have no influence over. In fact, it's just being spoon-fed to you like just a giant pile of shit put in your mouth. And there's nothing you can do. Mm. But with sort of like an atheist movement, an enlightenment movement, you can. I mean, it's based on sort of... It's based on principles that people can contribute to. You know, it's not just you have to be popular and cool in order to, you know, to say something of worth or value. It's mm-hmm. not like that at all. It's like what you have to say is the most important thing. And I think that's kind of the excitement of any movement like that, any young movement, is that it can be influenced by any person and anyone. I mean, we're part of that. We're part of the influencers, even of atheism. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, it sounds kind of scary to us because, again, we're just fucking pressing play and we're just talking.
And we don't even know where countries are.
We don't even know where Sudan is. Yeah. But we can have opinions that people, you know,
for some reason,
and like. I mean, it's as crazy as that sounds. And we're dumb. So there's bound to be people that are intelligent. Figure, I'm not going to take part in this. What are you talking about? Part of the discussion.
All of our leaders end up being like Richard Dawkins, and they release these smarmy fucking bus signs that say like, oh, don't you worry about religion. It's just hobnosh. Just go about your life and dilly-dally as you are and just enjoy yourself.
It's funny, too, because Richard Dawkins, I mean, I don't get me wrong, I love the guy. I think what's funny about him is he's always trying to convey his poetic understanding of the universe. He wrote an entire book, Unweaving the Rainbow, which is basically that, the poetry of science. Because I think that deep down, he wants to make people see science as sort of like this amazingly beautiful thing, and I agree that it is pretty damn phenomenal. Mm-hmm. But I can, you know, a person who reads that and all of a sudden thinks, oh, he's just trying to switch the type of beauty and love I have for God with just his science. This is BS. So they almost feel that there's a certain amount of disgenuine feeling coming from him. You know, like this, you're trying to trick me, motherfucker. You're just trying to tell me, oh, look at how a rainbow actually works.
Nah, it's a lot simpler than that. Let me explain to you why nobody trusts him. It's the accent.
You don't trust anybody with accents? I usually trust people with accents more.
You do, because that's what you're hardwired into your brain to think that people who talk like all British are better than people who talk all Southern-like. That's just what you got.
Well, you know what? Would
head.
You go to a brain surgeon who had a Southern accent or a brain surgeon with a British accent? Everybody feels that way, even though they don't think they do. And if a guy went like, okay, we're going to open up your head and we're going to just try and take some dentine names out. Yeah. You'd be like, whoa, dude. But if a guy can, well, welcome... today we're going to perform this kind of surgery, and we're going to be removing part of your brain.
But yeah, no, so we agree on this point that people would rather have somebody preaching to them that they could drink a beer with than, say, a Dawkins or a Hitchens, who just look like generally unpleasant people to hang around with. I mean, doesn't Dawkins just look like somebody that you try and have a conversation with him, and you'll be talking about the same thing, but he will disagree with you. And he will say that what I am, you know, I am Dawkins, and what I am saying is true, and what you are saying is wrong. You're like, Richard, we're talking about the same thing, and we're agreeing. He's like, no, this is, you're missing the point. And that just seems to me what he's always about.
You know what? I think the problem is this. This is the reason you don't like him. In every single one of his TV specials or movies or whatever he's in, he doesn't look like he listens, does he?
No, he does not.
He really doesn't look like he does. And I think that's what everybody sort of like picks up on. They're like, you are not listening to these people. And there was kind of a realization that I had over the Christmas holiday. Mm. This was I actually wrote about this. There was kind of a moment that I shared with my family and that kind of stuff. It was a very emotional moment. And I kind of realized that those emotional moments really are what define what we believe, in a sense. It's not anything, you know, like even though you might tell yourself, oh, I've come to believe everything I believe from an intellectual perspective, so on and so forth, that's not really true. I mean, there was a part of you when you're first discovering the world and the universe that had a sense of wonder and playfulness about the whole thing, and you enjoyed finding out about the world. Well, that enjoyment is kind of what has made you view the world in the way that it is. It's just how that emotional enjoyment worked out in the end. Mm-hmm. You know, how it was, you know, not maybe in some cases manipulated, other cases it was just kind of like you were let of your own device to try to figure these things out. But that influences ultimately what you believe. So I think the only way to really actually reach people is to kind of make them understand, saying like, listen, I have the same passion for knowing the universe and knowing other people that you do. I think that passion has kind of been commandeered by religion, who said, I got it all figured out. You just have to listen to me and you're going to have a grand old time. And the people that really do, they usually do have a grand old time. Do they know anything that's truthful? Probably not. They drink the Kool-Aid, and fuck, they love it. They love the flavor. The only way to actually reach those people is saying, like, listen, I can appreciate your need for this Kool-Aid, but you got to taste this, you know, other thing. You got to just try it. And once you do, you're going to look back and say, that was the most terrible fruit drink ever. It's just sugar and water. It's disgusting. Mm-hmm. I tried fresh papaya juice squeezed, like in, you know, wherever papayas grow. And it was wonderful. And why was I drinking Kool-Aid? This was unsatisfying. Mm-hmm. And I guess, you know, I realized myself, there's a certain proselytizing part of me that's just, I want other people to appreciate the kind of the way that I view the universe, because I think it's even more profound and even greater. And that's what Richard Dawkins feels like, mm-hmm. with science. But he can't convey that. He doesn't understand it emotionally. He only understands it intellectually. His emotion is sort of poetry.
He's too much of a Buzz Killington.
He's a Buzz Killington.
With his hardness, the thing with my hand.
He's an old man. He doesn't speak to the sort of like the young generation.
And let's not even get started on someone like Christopher Hitchens.
Oh, man. You know what? I just can't listen to a drunk. You know, he is witty. You just don't want him talking to you, because he's probably just going to take you apart. You know what I mean? Like saying like, oh, you know, you're a piece of shit. You know, everything you believe in is stupid.
And aren't you the world's largest hypocrite? I'll drive you to drinking too, motherfucker.
And I'm like, aren't you the same guy who thought we were right going to Iraq? Be like, you have some gaps in your credibility, sir. Mm. I'm like, sure, you're a biting satirist and I appreciate what you do, but I'm not going to, you're not going to be at the head of any movement that I am a part of. Fuck you, dude.
Okay, I guess we've pissed enough on the leaders of the atheist movement now.
Okay.
Is there anybody else that you want to, you know, it's the beginning of the year, you want to get anything off? You want to talk about those atheists next? What was that message board that's of assholes?
Oh, that's the Richard Dawkins Foundation sort of like forums. And it's not so much that they're assholes. It's just, again, I mean, these are people that are convinced that if I come up with the best argument possible, then I can convert everybody to believe what I believe. And I'm like, no. If arguments were all that were needed, then everybody would be a fucking atheist by now. Even Christians will admit. I mean, I've had conversations with them. They admit, we have the stronger arguments. It's not a question of arguments. It's a question of hearts and minds, people. Get over this need to prove it logically. Like, listen to me. I have proven the ultimate logical puzzle. I'm like, God, take a break. Take a breather. And this is the same reason why people are like, oh, goodatheist.net, you know, all these guys do, they're just talking yabber on, and who gives a shit, and there's no research. I'm like, we're just having a conversation, we're just trying to reach out. That's all I'm trying to do. You know, fuck, you want research, go to Richard Dawkins' forum. Fucking full of dickheads.
And watch what you say, because they'll probably delete your post.
Or they'll criticize a cartoon for having used the word evolutionist. Like, I think that thread went on for like 16 pages about other words that I shouldn't have used for a simple cartoon making fun of a Mac ad, and calling people who believe in evolution evolutionists. They're like, well, that's what creationists use to describe us. I'm like, oh my God, dude. Really, honestly, could we just chill the fuck out? Okay, let's talk about this. Let's talk about Rick Warren, who I accidentally thought was the guy who was...
Who?
Rick Warren.
Who?
I was a little bit out of it. I don't know. Hell, my mind was somewhere else. Yeah. So I didn't immediately recall who Rick Warren was. It didn't take me long to sort of like, no.
And you know what? If you prepared more, I'd just not have a good time.
You see? You see? I was right.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so here's the deal. Here's the two sides of the coin. Some people think the Rick Warren... basically being the dude that's going to be at Obama's inauguration. Some people think he's a good idea because that kind of shows that Obama's got his hand out. He's trying to bring the evangelicals back into the Democratic fold. And other people, namely gays and atheists, think it's the most offensive thing ever because obviously Rick Warren hates the gays. And Rick Warren obviously thinks we're all going to hell.
Yeah, undoubtedly.
So what side of the fence are you on?
I'm in the side of the fence that Rick Warren represents about 54% of the U.S. population. So I am offended by 54% of Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just not going to really make a big deal of the fact that 54% of them really offend me. You know, 54% is also the same percentage that voted no on, or what was it? You know, it voted yes on Proposition 8, you mm-hmm. know? You wanna be mad? Be mad at everybody else. Rick Warren is just, he's a poster boy for them. Mm-hmm. But so what? There's 20 other poster boys.
Yeah, but this poster boy is being included by the Obama administration inside, you know. Is he getting put on some kind of council for religious outlook or something like that?
But I mean, they have 20,000 of these councils. I don't know if it's fucking, if it means anything or if it's just one of those, hey, you're a religious leader and you can have this sweet-ass post.
Mm-hmm. So you don't care?
No, it's not. I didn't say I didn't care. I don't want to be as offended as everybody else because it kind of, you're putting all the blame on this one guy when he's just echoing everybody, what everybody wants to hear.
I think people aren't so much putting whatever they're putting on Warren as they are putting whatever they're putting on Obama, saying that you are basically spitting in my face as a gay person or my face as an atheist by including this bastard in your inauguration.
Well, you might be surprised, but I got $10 that says Obama doesn't like gays. I got fucking $10 writing on that shit.
Ooh, $10.
I got a whole $10. I don't think he likes him. Mm. I don't think he approves of their lifestyle. He definitely doesn't. I know he doesn't. He said he didn't support gay marriage. And that was probably him being very, very diplomatic about his feelings.
No, I'm pretty sure he said he didn't support a constitutional ban. But he said that it was a state decision.
I just get this feeling. Call it a feeling. Mm-hmm. I don't think he likes gays. I think maybe that's kind of a subtle message. Who knows? There has to be some kind of... Tell me what his mind is right now. You read his book. Well, you listened to his book via... Mm-hmm.
Audio book. Yeah.
Yeah. So tell me what's going on in his head, Mr. Obama expert. You are actually...
I don't know. You know, it's really hard to do because one thing I've learned from, you know, reading everything he said beforehand and reading everything that's going on now with him is the fact that everybody kind of thinks they know who he is and what he's up to because everybody just projects themselves onto him.
Like you. You did that too.
I did that. I definitely did that. And now he's doing stuff like he's not, you know, oh, I'm going to close Gitmo. Okay, maybe not. Maybe not yet. I'm going to have to work on that. And I'm going to do this and do that. And I'm just starting to get this feeling like, yeah, this is a guy that wants to do a lot of great things and he has a lot of base ideas. But now he's taking a look at the circuitry on the motherboard that is how America is set. And he's like, you know what? There is absolutely no way to get any of this stuff done without completely throwing this in the garbage and restarting from scratch. So, I mean, you know, what he feels and what he's going to get done are two completely different things. So, I mean,
so what's the logic behind the Warren thing then?
Hmm?
What's the logic behind it?
He's reaching out to the evangelicals. And you know what? As far as I'm concerned personally, I don't like Rick Warren. I don't like what he stands for. But I understand what Obama's doing. And to a degree, I kind of dig it. Because at the very least, he's opening up a dialogue with people who otherwise would just call him a baby killer. And any step in the right direction towards appeasing them... And not so much appeasing them, because you saw what happened with the Bush administration.
You saw what happened in World War II with appeasement. This is war.
But at least opening a dialogue with these people. I mean, because isn't that what everything's supposed to be about, right? Is opening a dialogue with people? I mean, if you're including Rick Warren in this situation, even though I think everybody admits that there's stuff about Rick Warren that's obviously no good. And even Obama would say, you know, his ridiculous, you know, I want to get rid of abortion stance is wrong.
Right. Or the fact that, you know, he opposes contraception to fight AIDS or,
yeah,
you know, all this other kind of stuff. And,
but, I mean, these people aren't going to listen unless they feel like they have a place in the administration. So, to a degree, I can understand it. I don't like it very much, but I see where he's going with it.
I guess everybody...
I just don't have the same trust I used to before that's kind of where it's going, where it's not just lead to appeasement.
Well, I understand everybody's problem because flirting with the religious right... is like...
You know, the Republicans thought they could do that, and look what happened to them.
Yeah, it completely utterly changed their party entirely. You know, it's unrecognizable because they're like, well, these are our bosses now. You know, they control us now. And they are a frightening bunch to have on any team. They're you know what they're like? It's like you have a soccer team at school, and you got to pick that one player, and there's one player, and he's really strong. But he's a crazy motherfucker. You know, he's going to stomp on your head. He's even going to beat up members of his own team. Like, you're just like, well, I should probably get him on my team because I don't want him on the other guy's team.
Yep.
He's a monster. He is a monster, and he keeps growing and growing. So what the fuck are you supposed to do with him? You know? I guess everybody's like, all right, let's see if we can talk to this monster. Let's see if we can calm the monster down and make them feel as though everything is all right.
I just worry a little bit about it because I think we've actually made headways in our more aggressive fronts where we're like, you know what? Being anti-gay is being a bigot, and it's completely wrong, you know? And I think kind of, and also the idea of saying that, you know, abortions should never happen, and that's just la-la land talk, you know?
That is,
and
I
think
really
I think a lot of people have come around to that general view that, you know, oh, I might think that penises and butts is gay, is gross, even though I watch it all the time in my pornography. But I still think it's morally wrong somehow. But, you know, I'm not going to be a bigot about it because we've hit that point now where you can no longer be a... You can no longer hate gays. It's no longer, you know, back in the day you say, what do you think about gay people? I don't like them. But nowadays, the same thing is, what do you think about black people? I don't like black people. People are like, whoa, what do you, you can't, what?
I'm sorry, what did you say? I don't know this guy. So I don't know this guy.
I think we've had more success than we give ourselves credit for as far as, you know, beating everything up. And honestly, I think that this whole war about gay people is going to be the Achilles heel for the entire church. It's going to drag them down because... Back with the church and the blacks and the Jews, there was never really a presence in the press or on television saying that, you know, these people were doing all this stuff. We don't have, you know, tons of film on it. But now we have, 20 years from now, when it's very obvious that being gay, there's nothing wrong with it, we're going to look back and we're going to be like, wow, the church literally carried that hate.
Well,
they carried it, and it's going to destroy.
But that's the funny thing about it.
Unless... We allow them in now, and we're kind of like, we give them an out, and we say, okay, well, that was before, and now they're coming in here, and this and that. And, you know, from my adversarial point of view, I'm like, they're down. Don't let them back in. They're down.
Yeah.
We beat them. They had their turn. They had their turn in the grand scheme of history, which was called the Middle Ages, and they had their turn in American frickin' politics, and that was the last 8 years of complete...
Complete fuck show. You can say now that we have a little explicit sticker next to our podcast. Here, you know what? You just changed my mind. Here's why I think that it's the most terrible idea. And you're right, because when you said that the church is behind all of this, and indeed it is. Indeed, hating homosexuals is something that the church has decided. This is our fight. We're going to win this. And I got news for them. They're not going to fucking win. And a bunch of other churches are going to slowly but surely are going to have to change because people's attitude in one generation isn't going to be the same in regards to homosexuality. But that's going to mean that the religious right, that part that never, ever changes, the part that have never changed since the goddamn, since they landed on Plymouth Rock, these Puritans, that part is still going to try to remain strong. Their MO now is saying, we need to breed, we need to have plenty of kids, we need to separate ourselves from this culture. They will become a culture within a culture. They will be very much like the sort of fundamentalist Mormon church. Those are cultures within countries. You know, they're their own separate entities. And this is something that we're going to see in the very near future. And what they like to do, what the religious rights likes to do, and what these tiny little pockets of culture are waiting for is they wait for opportunities during times of crisis, during times of shock, to come on in and say, like, you need to come over to us. We have all the answers. Things are confusing. Come to us. Mm-hmm. And they remain quiet most of the time, but then they find their moment. They're like, boom, you need to join us. You need to join us. And all of a sudden you're like, whoa, what's going on? I lost all my friends to this fucking cult. Well, that's exactly how... The cultish nature of the evangelical movement is exactly like that. And we're going to see it. So as soon as you bring one of these Giacomos up and saying like, okay, well, you guys are all right. They're not all right. They are seriously, seriously messed up. And they are messing up the minds of young people like you would not believe. You don't even know. I mean, they go to groups where they show slideshows of the most heinous fucking shit to... basically brainwash these kids is thinking, look, this is what happens when a woman goes to have an abortion. This is exactly what happens. Women have abortions because they're just, you know, they're lazy. They don't want to bring kids to term, and they love having them. They love them's abortions. You know, they love seeing the blood all over the place. They are a product of Satan. It is that simple for these people. That simple. And you're like, wow, No. You cannot give these guys even 20 minutes of your time, because that's 20 minutes they're going to spend trying to indoctrinate your kids. And, you know, there's so many of these young evangelicals whose parents are secular, and they're like, what happened to my kid? They're essentially dead. They're gone. My child was replaced by a brainwashed idiot that now spews everything that the fucking pastor says on their service at a rock concert. You know, obviously that's attractive to them, and that's what they're trying to do. They're creating a movement. Meanwhile, all these other, you know, atheists and fucking basements are like, I don't want to be part of no movement.
You use the wrong word to describe what we are.
I'm like, I got news for you. There is a bit of a cultural war going on, and we're going to lose.
You know,
we're going to lose if we continue to act the way we've been acting.
I just want to point this out, but you're kind of alarmist. I mean, we were having a nice discussion, and you just flipped the hell out. That was your rant for the show.
Yeah, well, you know, people like that rant.
Okay, well, good.
That's a highlight.
It's a little, just a little bit Fox News, you know. It's like, is drinking water giving you cancer? Are these kids going to freaking destroy everything? I mean, I was laying down that feel good 20 years from now, church will be nothing. And then you turn around and you say these people are going to breed to the point where they're going to separate from the rest of America.
Fundamentalist movements are just built like that. And if I was wrong, there'd be no fundamentalist Mormons. Like, they wouldn't exist. Of course they exist. The only reason that they are so fragmented is because we persecute the fuck out of them. Mm. We've said polygamy is illegal, and that is that Achilles heel that allows us to crack through their groups. Because if we weren't allowed to do that, you know, or if we didn't say, like, oh, you're marrying a child, therefore you're going to go to jail. If we didn't have that ability to do that, they would become their own sort of separate culture. They would become their own separate government and entities. Mm. But what are you supposed to do to break in sort of evangelical movement? Oh, this is child abuse? Forget about it. They're safe. They are rock solid. They're doing good. And they're doing better and better all the time. And if you want to know, you know, if that's true, considering the fact that, 78% of like most Americans think the prayer should be back in school. Meanwhile, 84% of young people think that they should bring prayer back in school. There is a clear, even movement towards the right in young people. It's just that obvious. What that means, I don't know.
I don't buy that clear move to the right with kids. I think things are getting greener, bluer and bluer. They're more and more liberal.
Well, we live in Canada. Of course we have that perception.
No, it's not even that. I mean, I read lots and lots of stuff down from the States, and just reading about how things are trending and reading about how all these people are more open towards this and open towards that. I mean, this is what I'm talking about. You're saying that we had polygamy, that we could fight with the Mormons, and that's how we basically messed them up. Well, I'm telling you what, gay bigotry is gonna sink the evangelicals.
You can't jail someone for just talking smack against gays.
It's going to get to the point where they're just going to look like backwards retards.
But that's the whole appeal. You know, like you're saying, can a movement be based on hate? I don't know. Ask the Nazis. Yeah, it works out pretty good sometimes.
Yeah, that was short term.
I'm
not saying it wasn't horrible and everything else like that. I'm just saying it collapsed. It collapsed on itself because it was evil and shitty.
Well, that doesn't necessarily mean that everybody who's going to be around is just can sort of like wash their hands of it and say, well, you know, evil begets evil, and they're going to chew themselves up, and it's going to be all good once it sort of turns around. It destroyed Europe, okay? Europe was in shambles. Mm-hmm. Look, I'm not comparing it to that necessarily. I'm just saying that you have to understand that although there is one movement that is also more to the left, sort of more open, more liberal-minded, it means that fundamentalist movements are a reaction to that. They grow. The more we become accepting, the more they grow.
Yeah,
because they're a counterculture movement. The stronger one side gets, the stronger the other side gets. That's all I'm saying.
The more seasons of A Shot at Love with Tequila that they watch, the more likely they are to just be like, our society is going down the toilet, time to team up with God.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? Here's a perfect example. We watch a lot of Family Guy, right?
Yeah.
If you showed a random clip of Family Guy to any person, I mean, it didn't even matter if they were, you know, liberal-minded or whatever. And in particular, I'll give you the one where Stewie gets shot in the head on the president's seal in the White House. Mm-hmm. You know, a dead baby shot by his own father.
His mother. Okay? Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, his father shoots him. So if I was to show you that scene saying, like, can this be allowed on TV? You'd be like, get the hell out of here. But it's acceptable because we know the context. It's meant to be a satire of itself, right? Mm-hmm. You're like, if you understand the context of the kind of individual Stewie is, you don't mind. You're like, this is hilarious. Mm-hmm. But a person coming out of, like, you know, sort of the Bible Belt looking at this thing would be horrified. They'd be like, this is the worst show ever. The liberal is liberal-minded people are monsters, and they don't realize these are comedies to us. We're making fun of this. They think that we're probably watching this and be like, yeah, go Satan! Like, this is what they see, because they don't understand the context of where we're coming from. They don't want to understand that context. So to us, the more we do these kinds of shows, the more they're like, holy moly, society is just evil. And they don't realize where the messages, for instance, of say Family Guy are you know, they're not that different from their kind of message. They're like, hey, you know, family should be together, blah blah blah, you know, good time had by all. It's not altogether that different. It's just the context of it is so shocking to them. I mean, I can understand, right? You're like, he shot that baby in the mouth. I mean, one random scene: Stewie puts a gun in his head, you know, like to in his mouth. A baby puts a gun in his mouth, like what? Showing random scenes of Family Guy, I think it's probably the best way to kind of shock people and seeing like, this is how an evangelical sees your show. You can understand why they might be scared to death of you and think that you are going to corrupt society. And that's all I'm saying. Look, I'm alarmist, but that's just because, you know, the alarmist shows do well.
yeah.
And like, we've got numbers to think about. I want to hit that 100,000, and I want to hit it, like, now.
Awesome.
I can't talk about a milestone if it hasn't happened yet.
So you're going to sell your non-existent soul to get that done?
Absolutely.
Awesome.
Absolutely. I think I've sold it 8 times already.
Groovy.
It has constant resale value, because who knows that you've sold that deed already? Nobody. All right, that wraps us the show. I'd like to remind everybody, send in your questions. I want a mailbag show. I want your questions. I want your opinions. You know?
What email?
It's jacobforte@gmail.com. So my name in full @gmail.com. It's actually pretty damn simple. There are no dots, no underscores. jacobforte@gmail.com. It's pretty damn simple.
Awesome.
All right, I am Jacob Forte.
And I'm Ryan Harkness.
Have a good day. Atheist Day, everybody.
Best is yet to come, and babe, won't that be fine? You think you've seen the sun, but you ain't seen it shine.